Welcome to Deconstructed. I'm TJ O'Hara, the principal political analyst for IVN, the Independent Voter News. Our goal on Deconstructed is to break down important political issues with outstanding guests, so you can develop your own more informed opinion. My guest today is California State Senator Brian Jones. Senator Jones is deeply committed to public service. He began his political career when he was elected as a member of the Santee City Council, a position which he filled from 2002 to 2010. In 2010, he ventured into state politics and was elected to the California Assembly, in which he served until 2016. After being term limited in the Assembly by California law, he returned to the Santee City Council from 2016 to 2018, before winning his current Senate seat representing California's 38th District in 2018, which encompasses a large portion of San Diego County. Senator Jones proudly serves as the vice chair of three Senate committees, Human Services, Insurance, and Natural Resources and Water. He also sits on the Senate Appropriations Committee, the Senate Governmental Organization Committee, the Senate Judiciary Committee, and the Senate Business, Professions, and Economic Development Committee. He also sits on five select committees. For those who may not know, the California Senate is comprised of 40 members, 31 of whom are Democrats. Senator Jones is a Republican. We're going to talk about what that's like and how he can still get things done without falling into a deep state of depression. So welcome to Deconstructed, Senator Jones.
You're digging me out of my deep state of depression right now just by talking to you.
I can assure you it's my pleasure, Senator. As I mentioned before, you have 31 Democrats and 9 Republicans in the Senate, but you ought to be used to that. You had 60 Democrats, 19 Republicans, and only one independent when you were in the House. And it's been that type of imbalance for about 50 years.
Right. When I got elected to the Assembly in 2010, we actually had 26 Republicans, or 28 actually. We had 28 Republicans in 2011. That was two more than the one-third. So in my first term in the Assembly, we actually could block some of Governor Brown's at the time brilliant tax ideas that he had and prevent them from getting approved or on the ballot. And that was a very good time to be in the legislature.
At the federal level, it's so embarrassingly hyper-partisan that it's virtually taboo to reach across the aisle without being at risk of being chastised or defunded by one's party. Is California that bad at this point, or is there still hope?
No, as far as the bipartisan nature of the camaraderie, we're actually pretty good. Obviously, we have very vigorous debates on the Senate floor on important issues. If it's on the floor of the Senate, the Democrats are promoting it, and Republicans are fighting it. But after that debate is said and done, we move on to the next bill, and it may pass unanimously with all Republicans, all Democrats supporting a bill. So, you know, for example, in the last week of session, we processed about 1,000 bills in those 4 or 5 days of the final days of session. I'm going to guess, and I can get you a real number, 65% or more, maybe even 85% of those bills have both Republican and Democrat votes. And maybe 15% of them, the Republicans vote no or don't vote at all on a particular bill. And if it's a Republican bill, all Republican bills are bipartisan, 100%. So all of the Republicans, all of us that get bills passed to the governor's desk have to work in a bipartisan manner.
What's your track record personally and as a party of getting bills passed?
As far as the party is concerned, I don't know. I think every Republican has gotten at least one bill signed, not more. Last year, 2021, I had 5 of 6 bills signed, 6 bills that made it to the governor's desk. He vetoed one. It's funny, he vetoed the one that had the most government union support. SEIU actually was a supporter of the bill and sponsor, and that's the one he vetoed. And then this year, I think we've gotten 9 to the governor's desk, and he's signed 2 so far. I think we'll have a pretty good track record this year as well.
Outstanding. Now, plus the countless others that either sit in committee or have died, what tends to slow down bills in the California State Senate?
Typically, whatever interest group doesn't like it will slow it down. So, for example, if it's a pro-business bill and the Chamber of Commerce is behind it, plus several other pro-business groups, maybe NFIB or Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association, and it's moving through the process, there might be a particular anti-business group that doesn't like it, maybe the trial attorneys, or it might have an environmental aspect that some of the environmental groups don't like, or, you know, there's a myriad of special interest groups in Sacramento that could come out against it. They'll slow it down in the committee process. And then vice versa is true with a very ingenious, what is being coined as a environmental law is coming through, but it actually, the details of the bill restrict freedom or impact businesses in a negative way or employers and employees. And, you know, what a lot of these special interest groups, when they're saying it's pro-business, forget that a pro-business bill is a pro-employee bill. Every business has employees. So I'd like the media to kind of refine their messaging on that. But back to the bill situation, then these environmental groups or the trial attorneys, they can slow it down or kill it in committee. And that is kind of the, in a nutshell, how the process works.
Now, among some of the bills that you've been successful in having passed, you had an off-highway vehicles bill, a wonderful bill on homelessness we'll address in a later segment, a design-build contracting in compliance with Federal Americans and Disability Act of 1990. Which one of those are perhaps the best indication of how you were able to work with your compatriots on the Democratic side and reach across the aisle?
The OHV bill, definitely, because this was our third attempt at that bill. So it passed in 2020, the Senate and the Assembly. The Assembly included some amendments, so it had to come back to the Senate. Unfortunately, it passed the Assembly at midnight on August 31st, 2020. So it didn't have time to come back to the Senate for concurrence to get to the governor's desk. And then in 2021, the bill was held in appropriations. We learned through the process that one of the state departments, and I don't remember if it was Parks or DMV, had some issues with it. So they held it in appropriations that year. This year, we were able to remove all of the opposition from environmental organizations, which is pretty phenomenal with an OHV bill. That might be historic, actually. We need to look into that because it could be the first time an OHV bill is passed without any environmental opposition. We think we've gotten to the point where the state departments like it. So it's on the governor's desk waiting for his signature. And hopefully we get a signature before the end of the month.
Now let's talk about Are You Kidding Me? You do these videos called Are You Kidding Me? That shine a light on kind of the nonsensical policy that's coming out of Sacramento on occasion. Is that personal therapy? Or do you like to engage with your electorate? I find them fascinating. Point by point, you're spot on. And it's fun the way you do it. I really enjoy those. Can you talk about a couple of those or what stimulated that thought?
Sure. Well, it certainly started out as personal therapy. When I first got elected to the Assembly, you know, I came from private enterprise, business, entrepreneur, and then I was on the city council. My city council was pretty reasonable, all five members. We worked well together. We didn't always agree, but when we disagreed, it was for legitimate reasons. And there isn't really in Santee a particular one special interest group that drives things in Santee. It's pretty broad spectrum. When I got to the Assembly, I quickly learned that there's some very influential special interest groups in Sacramento that may or may not have the public's best interest in mind as they're advocating for or trying to kill bills. And so many times I would go to committee, I would come back in to my office, maybe slam the door, maybe just aggressively close it and exclaim, "Are you kidding me?" And then share with my staff at the time what was driving me crazy. And then one of them one day said, "We're going to start videotaping these when you come in." And so rather than do that, we decided to do a professional presentation and start presenting these. And one of the things I try to endeavor whenever I'm complaining about something or pointing out something that doesn't work, I always want to provide a solution as well. You know, I think too many politicians spend more time bloviating about the problem without really trying to be creative on how to fix it. And so I take the first part of the Are You Kidding Me to explain to the public what they probably don't see and recognize or even know about how the Capitol operates, and the media too, because a lot of the media outside of Sacramento doesn't know how it works. So I want to try to show people how the Capitol actually works, it's dysfunctional. And then the Are You Kidding Me is, can you believe that this is actually happening? And then the closing part of the Are You Kidding Me is what I think we should do different, or how it could be handled differently, or what a solution is. And we try to keep these under a minute long. Last year they got a little bit lengthy because the problems that we were discussing were a little bit more in depth. But we want to keep them short, entertaining like you're saying, but poignant and to the point. so that people can grasp it in a small amount of time.
Well, I highly recommend them. So, Senator Jones, we're going to take a quick break and talk more about California politics when we come back. Welcome back. My guest today is Senator Brian Jones, who represents California's 38th District. And Senator, we have significant challenges in California from an economic perspective. Cost of living is skyrocketing. There are hidden taxes in a lot of the bills. Can you walk us through what's transpiring and what you're trying to do about it?
Yeah, so let's talk about two. One is the fast food industry being attacked at the final weeks of session, and then we'll talk about the utility bills that Californians pay. So first of all, is the $22 per hour minimum wage hidden tax that was put into place 2 weeks ago at the end of session when, you know, the Democrats thought it was a good idea to start a new state council. And basically, it's a new bureaucracy to oversee the employment, pay, and benefits for fast food workers. And look, probably a lot of your listeners, myself, I started as a fast food worker. Lots of people have done that. If you stay in the fast food industry, there's obviously great careers that come out of that as far as general managers, area supervisors, executive VPs, and some people even become the CEOs of those companies by starting whatever the line service start is, either it's McDonald's, or in my case, it was Domino's, Jersey, what does any of those franchises and fast food industries. So the hidden tax there is now the cost of the food is going to go up, which is a hidden tax really on communities that can afford it the least. And those communities that work in those industries are now going to be impacted. Some of them are going to lose their jobs because businesses have to make a decision between capital or labor. And if labor becomes more expensive, they're going to move their investment towards capital. And so we did a TikTok video on that with an Obama quote showing that during a recession, the worst thing you can do is raise taxes. And so I would encourage your listeners to check out my TikTok page. The address is SCN Brian Jones. And in addition to the Are You Kidding Me videos, we do a lot of other stuff there too that kind of points out what's going on in Sacramento. Another hidden tax that a lot of Californians don't recognize or see is every single utility bill that you pay, whether it's your cell phone, electric bill, landline, water bill, there's always a surcharge in there for some kind of money redistribution managed by the government. So for example, on your electric bill, there's additional surcharges that across the state adds up to about $500 million, half a billion dollars that the state, that the SDG&Es, PG&Es, SoCal Edison, the municipal agencies all redistribute to other communities against their will. I mean, the companies aren't wanting to do this, but the state is mandating that they do this. And so there's a bunch more hidden taxes. We have a dollar per gallon gas tax in California, taxes and fees. That's seven different line items of taxes and fees that we pay as part of that dollar per gallon. And just everywhere you go, about every dollar you spend in California, there's hidden taxes in that somewhere in the process.
Relative to the gasoline tax, I've heard you speak before with the checks that are going to be going out to certain individuals, interestingly enough, just before the elections.
Right.
But the impact of rather than reducing the gas tax, which would treat everybody equitably, you brought up a specific impact on veterans.
Right, veterans and military personnel. So the governor's proposal has been approved by the legislature is to send rebate checks. They haven't still said how much they're going to be, but they're going to send rebate checks to homes that have registered cars in California. Well, for veterans and more precisely, current military personnel that serve in California are based here in California, but they keep their car registered in their home state, they will not be receiving those rebate checks. And I think that's a slap in the face of those people that are here in California from other parts of the country. And look, when they get here, they're already surprised by the cost of living. Now gas is more expensive, and because they're keeping their cars registered in their home state because it's a lot less expensive, they're going to miss out on that rebate check. And they're buying gas. They're paying the exorbitant gas prices. They should be entitled to some kind of relief as well.
Now, we have an electrical vehicle mandate. We have elimination of natural gas appliances being proposed, phase out of nuclear energy. There are a variety of bills around this. Do we actually have a plan to address the massive demand that's going to be created on the electrical grid? Or are we just counting on the mass exodus of people and businesses right. from the state?
Yeah, well, the natural gas thing is already happening in other parts of the state. And I think San Diego right now is debating it, that all new homes will not be allowed to have any natural gas appliances. That's just asinine. That is as unintelligent of a policy as you can get in California. Because first of all, natural gas is affordable, the appliances are affordable, and we don't have enough electricity right now for everybody, for all of your hot water heater to be electric, your oven to be electric, you know, and everything else that can be ran on natural gas should be ran on natural gas. No, there's not a plan. And when the governor and the proponents of this all electric car situation by 2035 or whatever it is, and you watch next year, there'll be a bill to make it 2030. Because unfortunately, in California right now, to be considered effective legislator, to be considered getting something done, is not so much legislating for today and solving today's problems. It's what bills can you get through? And this is the majority party, of course. What bills can you get through that raises taxes? And if you can get a bill through that raises taxes, you're considered an effective legislator. Or if you can shorten these timeframes of these aspirational goals, then you're considered an effective legislator. But you're not solving today's problems. All you're doing is exacerbating tomorrow's problems.
Speaking of today's problems, California has a unique situation relative to crime and prosecution. Can you speak to that issue?
Well, my understanding is it's not going to be unique for very long, because Illinois and New York are proposing bills that basically does the same thing that our Prop 8109, Prop 47, and Prop 57, which those three bills working together have decreased law enforcement's ability to have a positive impact on our communities by taking away some prosecutorial tools that they need to clean up crime on our streets. So that's why we're seeing a growth in homelessness in California. It's why we're seeing a rise in petty crime in California. And look, when you have both of those things going on at the same time, you're also going to have a rise in violent crime, homicides, which is happening in San Diego County right now. San Diego's homicides, I think last year, 2021, were up either 7 or 10% over the previous year, or the previous decade, actually. And this rise in petty crime and these smash and grab thefts, because Sacramento, under the majority party, and this really is on Governor Brown's hands, but Newsom hasn't done anything to fix it. We've decriminalized so many of these crimes that now the criminals, you know, they get a citation, they can steal up to $950. We see examples of these organized crime waves going into stores with calculators to add up what they're stealing so they don't cross the 950 threshold. Or worse than that, we're seeing these gangs of people going into stores and just grocery bag, clearing the shelves and walking out unscathed and unafraid that they're even going to be prosecuted. And that's due to policies coming out of Sacramento.
Well, Senator Jones, we're going to take another quick break and talk about some additional state issues when we come back. Welcome back. My guest today is Senator Brian Jones, who represents California's 38th district and is up for re-election in November. Senator, you had talked in the course of discussing crime, you'd mentioned homelessness and how crime is contributing to homelessness. Let's talk about housing and homelessness in California, how you see the problem and what you're trying to do to solve that.
Probably the number one response whenever we talk about homelessness and some of my solutions, one of the comments we get from naysayers or whatever is, criminalizing homelessness isn't a solution. Well, decriminalizing it hasn't been a solution either. And we've had 10 years of decriminalizing lower level crimes, petty theft, lower level assaults and things like that. And that hasn't worked either. So I get that there's this tension between crime and homelessness and what's the solution. But what we need to realize now in California, we have crossed the Rubicon, so to speak, of homelessness in California, of leaving behind families that are down on their luck, single moms, single dads living out of their cars with their kids that need help. There are resources in California that can overwhelm those folks with help and assistance, and we do that every day from my district office. And we want to help those people and help them get back on their feet and recover. And you know what? Those are the temporary homeless people that they don't want to be on the street. They want the help and they want to get in a good place again. And we're going to help them. But when I say we've crossed the Rubicon, we have gotten to the point in California where we have allowed all of these crimes to move together, so to speak, in a cultural manner. We've created a permanent homeless class in California, to where we are overrun with either one of two things or both, drug addiction or mental illness. And, you know, I would propose, let's look at the ones that are homelessness because of a mental illness. Let's concentrate on them first, because those are the ones that can be helped the easiest, I believe. And let's get them healthy again. Let's put together policies and responses that get them the services they need to get healthy again, get on whatever medication or medical treatment they need to overcome their mental illness or be able to deal with it in a healthy manner. The second thing is on this drug addiction, we have lowered the crime on drug possession, drug distribution. The types of drugs have been decriminalized to the point now where a proposal this year in Sacramento was for the state to run facilities for people to come in off the street and shoot up their drugs in a, quote, safe environment with medical attention, which is completely bogus to think, number one, there's a safe street drug. Number two, the state is capable of managing a facility. And number three, we're really going to put qualified medical people there. So that's where some Californians have gotten on this. I think most Californians recognize that we have a drug problem in California that we need to start managing and impacting in a positive way. And that's giving tools back to police, prosecutors, and judges to compel these folks that are drug addicted into some kind of recovery program that they have to work on getting better.
Now let's talk about education. California was number one in the nation when I was growing up. We're now 34.
We must be about the same age. When we moved here, I moved here in 1978 from Colorado, and California education was number one in the country.
Yeah, no question. People were moving here because of the educational system. We're 34th out of 50 academically now. What's happened? What's driving that decline? And what do you see are potential solutions?
Well, in the early 80s, one of the problems was Governor Brown pushed a bill that allowed government schools to unionize, basically. So that put in place the long march of the CTA being in charge in California. And look, CTA is a powerful lobby in Sacramento. They're one of the most powerful. And I want to be very careful here and make it very clear. I have no criticism of the everyday teachers that are working in the classroom trying to do a good job under the pressure from students, from parents, from administrators, and from the union. And let's face it, the union puts pressure on good teachers to try to compel them into teaching in the manner that CTA wants them to teach, rather than allowing them to be creative and run their classroom the way they run it. And unfortunately, the common mindset in Sacramento right now is every good policy comes from Sacramento, and every bad policy comes from the local school board. And I'm telling you and your listeners, it's the exact other way around. Every good policy and every good work that the schools are trying to do come from the local school boards, and the CTA is trying to manage our education system entirely from Sacramento, which is impossible with 8 million students in K through 12. And so that has eliminated competition. There's constant pressure in Sacramento pushed by the CTA to negatively impact charter schools, to negatively impact private schools that parents are paying twice for, by the way, in California, because they're paying their property tax and then they're paying their tuition to go to a private school or homeschooling. And really, charter schools and homeschools are under the greatest pressure right now from the CTA. The CTA just has a abject hatred towards those two education systems and want to shut them down.
What's your position on vouchers and choice?
If we had a bill that could get passed either through the legislature or on the ballot, depending on, you know, obviously the language and the minor details, but it's a concept that I support. The bottom line is there's no competition. There's little competition in education in California right now. Competition breeds excellence. Competition is good for the charter schools. Competition is good for the private schools. Competition is good for homeschooling. And as a result of all of that, competition is good for the traditional public schools also.
And very quickly, where do you see the direction of parental involvement in the California school system going?
I think it's going to go one of two ways. I think that there are parents that are completely fired up at this point in time and are determining to get more involved, and they are going to be more involved. And then, like everything, there's parents that either don't want to pay attention, aren't paying attention, can't pay attention because they're stressed out and busy with work and other things. But we're going to see more and more parents become more and more involved. And I'm hoping putting positive pressure on these local school boards, which will by extension move its way up to Sacramento and put pressure on Sacramento as well.
Senator Johnson, the limited amount of time we have left, where can our listeners go to learn more about you and your positions on the issues, as well as support your campaign if they so choose?
If they Google my name, Senator Brian Jones, my official Senate page will come up and my campaign page. My campaign election page is Elect Brian Jones. And then my official social media pages, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and now TikTok, are SEN Brian Jones. So if you just search SEN Brian Jones on those platforms, subscribe and follow. We'd be happy to have all of your listeners join our team, either as a listener and a viewer of our social media. And if they want to help with the campaign, electbrianjones.com, they can go on, sign up as a volunteer, sign up to donate, whatever, however they'd like to help. There's lots of information there. electbrianjones.com.
Senator Brian Jones, you have a huge responsibility representing California's 38th district. And as a Republican in California, the deck is stacked against you when it comes to fostering change. Then again, you've demonstrated a remarkable ability to get things done. So I wish you all the best in your reelection campaign. And Senator Jones, thank you again for joining me on Deconstructed.
TJ, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure. I look forward to talking to you some more and hopefully hearing some feedback from your listeners.